And how are the children? Kasirian Ingera, this warrior greeting, honoring the central role of children in the life of a community. And how are the children? What might be different in our culture if we greeted one another with this question and waited for a true answer, not just a variation of fine? What might change if our legislators and congressional representatives began every session, every committee meeting, every speech with, "How are the children?" and really listened to the answer? How would that shift our policy making and orientation to our society? It's a powerful question to ask in this election year. Because the children are not well. All over the world, and right here in Idaho, the children are not well. 98,000 children in Idaho go hungry. That's 1 in 4. 16.2 million nationwide. And hunger certainly isn't the only issue. Millions of children can't afford early childhood education, despite the many studies that have shown it being a huge factor in educational success and learning and staying in school. Another issue we struggle with here in Idaho. The children are not well. We know this to be true, but it is so easy to forget because we don't often hold the children at our center of collective action. We don't see them as a measuring tool for society writ large. This belief in individualism, the drive for personal opportunity, freedom, and success, for feeding ourselves alone, is deeply rooted in our American cultural identity. The ideas of every man for himself and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps ignores any tie to the greater good, to humanity, to one's own community. And while we may intellectually resist such sentiment, this rampant self-determinism still runs like a strong undercurrent in our social and political systems. It's in our blood. And yet, for us as Unitarian Universalists, this kind of hyper-individualism runs counter to our theology and our spirituality. It runs counter to our commitment to interconnection, our commitment to human dignity, our commitment to compassion and justice. We feel the call that asks us to look beyond our own lives and understand that the plight of another also exists within ourselves. And rather than look away, even though that force is strong too, especially when the despair of the world's needs sets in, rather than turn away, we turn toward the other, toward the brokenness, toward the injustice, and ask, "What am I called to do?" Knowing what I know and having what I have, how am I called to live my life? Great religious leaders have been lifting up this call for millennia. The ancient Jewish elder Hillel, writing in 30 BCE, asked this question, examining the tension between serving the self and serving the other. He said, "If I am not for myself, who is for me? But if I am only for myself, who am I? And if not now, when? If not now, when?" Where our children are concerned, the time is now. investing in their well-being, in their education, in their greatness and success may very well be our greatest gift to the future of this country and the future of our planet. But as sociologist Abraham Maslow so beautifully describes, if we do not feed our children, if we do not ensure that their basic physiological needs and personal safety needs are met, we will never be able to support and grow their self-esteem, their learning, their connection to the world, their feeling of love and belonging, and their full self-actualization. Next week begins the season of Lent for Catholics and Christians. And those practitioners across the globe will honor the sacrifice of Jesus and his own time of prayer, fasting, and confronting temptation for 40 days and 40 nights in the wilderness. The contemporary practice of Lent, as I'm sure you know, invites people to give up something, to sacrifice or fast for something for the 40 days between Ash Wednesday and Easter Sunday. Often we hear our friends and neighbors talk about how they're giving up candy or alcohol or television or chocolate for Lent. But that practice does not connect us with any deep experience of sacrifice. It does not turn us toward the other as Jesus did throughout his ministry. It lacks spiritual depth. In his 2015 Lenten message, Pope Francis urges people to make a new sacrifice or fast for Lent. Rather than fasting from candy or alcohol, he suggests people fast from indifference to others. He describes this problem of the globalization of indifference, noting that those whose lives are relatively healthy and comfortable don't think about those whose lives are full of suffering and need. He suggests that Christians must confront this growing indifference. I believe this is a task for all of us. Pope Francis writes this: whenever our interior life becomes caught up in its own interests and concerns, there is no longer room for others, no place for the poor. God's voice is no longer heard, the quiet joy of his love is no longer felt, and the desire to do good fades. We end up being incapable of feeling compassion at the outcry of the poor, weeping for other people's pain, and feeling the need to help them, as though all this were someone else's responsibility and not our own. As though they were someone else's responsibility and not our own. Our hungry children already sacrifice more than anyone should ever have to. Imagine if for 1 week, or maybe even just one day, we put ourselves in the shoes of those children and gave up food as a luxury, eating only the kind of breakfast and lunch these children would receive in school and no dinner. How might we experience sacrifice then? How might we look at the world differently? Certainly, we would open up a deep spiritual experience about our own social location and privilege, forcing us to think about food and hunger in a whole different way. And I want to acknowledge, as we've already heard, that there are some in this community who do not have to practice this sacrifice. You live it on a regular basis. So let me take this quick moment to remind all of us that we have our own little food pantry in that closet right behind the screen there. And anyone is welcome to take as much as they need whenever they need it. No questions asked, just help yourself. This is one of the many gifts that we offer one another in this fellowship, born out of that call to turn toward another and ask, what am I called to do? And by the way, pantry contributions are also always welcome. Detroit native and activist Grace Lee Boggs posed the question, what time is it on the clock of the world? There are many ways to interpret the question, but even just asking it pushes us to look beyond our own lives. Today we might answer, it is time to feed the children. Tomorrow, our answer might be something else, but whatever the answer is, it acknowledges our interconnection and asks us to see those that are suffering, those that are different, and then to remember, we are they are us. We are bound up in this intricate web of existence together. We are the world. If you've noticed, I've been saying our children to refer to the children of our state and our country and our world. They are all our children. That is why we must see them if we are to be moved to act. That African proverb, it takes a village to raise a child, isn't a cliche. It is an orientation toward life. Away from individualism, toward collectivism, or better yet, toward beloved community. You know the basic meaning of this proverb. Rearing a child is a responsibility of the entire community. If we really are to be a global community and invest in our future, then we must be the village. We must share the burden and the joy. And it is joyful. It is the sentiment that brought me to church many years ago and kept me coming back. I had long felt the pull to be part of something larger, to be part of a community exploring matters of spiritual depth and a community who strives to make the world a better place. That I found one who does this as a practice of faith stirs something deep within me. Then when Michael and I started our family, I knew the church would become our village, stepping in to help us and encourage us when we were at our wits' end, giving extra hugs and high fives, dinners and play dates where our children could explore their progressive ideas together, teaching them about their bodies, sexuality and healthy relationships, and sharing the heartbreak of the world with them while encouraging them to find the joy and imagine new possibilities for humanity. And though our children aren't all with us right now, I want us all to let them know and remind ourselves that each of us here in this community is available to them. Each of us is available to answer their questions, to give them extra hugs and high fives, to be someone they can turn to in times of sorrow and loss and joy, or someone they can turn to for that cookie after church when mom says no. It's the pledge we make in our child dedication to be the village for our children. It takes a village. And where child hunger is concerned, Feed the Gap is embodying that proverb, stepping in as part of the village with principals, school districts, the USDA, complementing the other villagers working to feed the hungry in our state with the goal of ensuring every child in our state gets fed at school, especially if they don't qualify for nutrition assistance. Every single child who needs it. And after talking with Anne, I can see that that goal is indeed attainable. And this month, you get to be part of that village. If we contribute $1,000 with our collective offering this month, we will have provided breakfast and lunch for 300 days. We are the village. We are the world. So when that song, We Are the World, was released, I was 10 years old. It was 1985. We had the vinyl album, and I played it so much I wore it out. I had the USA for Africa t-shirt, and I watched the video over and over again. And though there were some critics who felt like the effort didn't go far enough to explore the causes of famine in Africa, it was the first single in history to go multi-platinum. But for me, it was more than just a song that featured every popular artist of the time. It was a moment when I began to connect with the brokenness and need of the world. There comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. What I saw were people of great influence, status, and privilege, people I admired. Okay, people I obsessed over, but we're talking about Michael Jackson and Cyndi Lauper here. These celebrities were using their status and privilege for good in the world, to bring attention to the plight of starving people on another continent. And this was the height of the 80s, perhaps the decade we associate with the apex of self-obsession. They were saying, hey, pay attention. The world is calling us. We have to do something. We need to help one another. We can't go on pretending day by day that someone, somewhere, will soon make a change. Let's realize that change can only come when we stand together as one. They were saying, the change is us. The time is now. The song raised $63 million, the equivalent to $136 million today for humanitarian aid in Africa and the U.S. And 25 years later, they did it again for Haiti. This song and its message are so deeply ingrained in my childhood experience. Every time I watch the video, I cry. I got the message. As a young preteen, I felt this calling to a different life, this stirring of my soul. I saw my own life in a new way, recognizing that the blessing of being born in this country and to my family meant I already had some privilege. I made a silent commitment to never let that feeling go, to always notice and help those in need, knowing deep in my soul that we are all connected. We are the world. We are the children. There's a choice we're making. We're saving our own lives. It's true, we make a better day, just you and me. Living out the allegory of the long spoons, when we feed each other, all are fed. May it be so. Amen.